are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing as we kickstart another week. We've got a stacked show for a Monday today. Steve Merrill steps up and in. Coach Nick joins us. Cody Saftick in studio talking some MMA. Maybe a little Kentucky Derby as well. So we've got a full house as far as the guests are concerned. We've got NBA playoffs tonight. We've got NHL playoffs. Got a full slate of Major League Baseball, Yankees and Cubs last night. I believe it was the longest game ever. And I jumped in and bet this game in the in-game, in like the eighth inning or something like that. I got more than I bargained for, and it freaking sucked, man. The game went to like 2 a.m. I ended up losing. It's like brutal. Absolutely brutal. They're both on the board tonight. We'll break it down with Steve and Merrill. Listen, you got, you know, they went, you go 18 innings, you got problems the next game. Their bullpens are taxed. So we'll break down the Yankees and the Cubs playing not against each other tonight, but they're both in action. And they both have trips to take as well. Both bad scheduling spots. We break it down with Merrill. Coach Nick joins us. Only one game in the association this evening. And the NBA playoffs have been blowout city, sweep city. It'll probably continue tonight with the Golden State Warriors and the Utah Jazz. You know, the point spread's up to 8.5 right now. It might hit 10. You know, the Warriors are that good. The Warriors are that much of a public team. They're laying 8.5 points on the road. All right, so we have a lot of basketball to break down with Coach Nick. UFC, it feels like it's been forever since there's been a UFC card. Rightfully so. They step aside for Cinco de Mayo. But if they're not careful, boxing's going to push them aside down the road. But nevertheless, we've got a very, very, it's a stack card this week. It's not a superstar card. It's not a mainstream card. But it's a hell of a fight card this week. I think it's in Dallas, all right? So Cody Saftick's going to join us. Got a ton of stuff to get to on the program. It's a crazy time of the year right now to be a sports fan. First Saturday of May, often known as the busiest sports day of the year. Didn't really get that hype this year. But always dreaming lives up to the hype. And if you tuned into the program last week, we told you about 33 times that Always Dreaming was going to win the Kentucky Derby. Always Dreaming wins the Kentucky Derby. The New York Rangers are right now. Their backs are against the wall. They blow a big lead against the Ottawa Senators. The Washington Capitals stave off elimination. Yet seems like it's imminent, isn't it, that the Washington Capitals are going to get bounced. So, you know, there's a ton of freaking stuff going on. As I said, you got Cubs, Yankees. Cubs got swept by the Bronx Bombers. Ton of stuff going on in the sports world, but the biggest event of the weekend was inside the square circle. And that, of course, was Canelo versus Alvarez. As expected, Canelo crushes him. He was a minus 600 favorite, so... You know, Canelo did what he had to do, and then boxing did what they had to do immediately after the fight. They brought in Gigi. They go face to face. They announce that they're going to be fighting in September, and they give fight fans what they want. Now, I've been around a while, and I've seen the pendulum swing back and forth with sports popularity over the years. I remember growing up watching NASCAR, the old Winston Cup days. NASCAR was watching the South. It was like the Dukes of Hazzard type of deal. It was on CBS Sports Saturday for an hour or whatever. You know, it wasn't a national powerhouse. You know, growing up was the Indy 500. You know, open car racing. You know, Indy 500. And then, of course, the Tony George dude at the track screwed everything up, got greedy, said, I own the track, I want to do this, I want to do that. They ended up splitting into two leagues, Indy Racing League and the Champ Kart Series, which is actually pretty good, the Champ Kart Series. But what happened? NASCAR moved in, took over the landscape, and now NASCAR by far is America's top motorsport. And you know what? If you're younger, you'd think it was always like that. It wasn't like that. You know, the pendulum swung. I remember growing up when I was a kid, staying up way late to watch the NBA Finals on tape delay. All right? And I'm not that old. So, you know, we're talking about the 70s, man. Late 70s, the NBA Finals were on tape delay. You believe that? They were on tape delay. Now look at the NBA. And the NBA is catching up to the NFL right now as far as, you know, the biggest and most powerful league in the world, if they already have it. So, you know, things that change, which leads me in once again into the squared circle. Remember years ago, and I remember I had Dana White on a show I did years ago on satellite radio. And UFC was trending upwards, but it was about 12 years ago, probably. And, you know, Dana was talking about how, you know, the reason why the UFC is better than boxing is because our champions fight each other. Our champions don't win the belt and then run away for a year. They don't duck fights. There is no commission. They fight the next man up. He told us one of the reasons why the UFC is so popular is because, unlike boxing, there's not only one good fight on the card. People want to see every fight on the card. Well, you know, we could go on and on and on about why the UFC overtook boxing. Fast forward, here we are right now. The UFC recently sold for over $4 billion. And you look at the UFC like Metallica, so to speak. You know, Ride the Lightning, epic. You know, Kill 'Em All. You know, Master of Puppets, masterpiece. Yeah. Enter Sandman sucks. They made more money with Enter Sandman than they made with anything else. So the UFC's making money right now, so they could really give two craps. But ironically enough, they become boxing, or at least what boxing used to be. And you look at boxing now, and now boxing is sort of copying what the UFC is doing. You know, boxing's always had ring girls and stuff. But you notice there's more of them now, and they look like UFC octagon chicks. They dress the same. There's more sort of WWE angle and sprinkled into boxing as of late. There was 90,000 people a couple of weeks ago at Wembley in England. Boxing's not dead. It's been living in Europe for a while, but it's about to hit America once again. We know all about, like, how the Mexicans love this stuff, so it's not as if, oh, Cinco de Mayo, big deal. They had a big boxing match. Of course they do. Anyone paying attention to what Anthony Joshua did a couple of weeks ago against Klitschko. And when I watched that fight, I said to myself, when I saw that combination and the uppercut, I said to myself, I haven't seen a heavyweight throw like that since Mike Tyson. I was around when Mike Tyson fought, all right? Of course, Twitter lit up. Hey, you're an idiot. Joshua's no Mike Tyson. I never said he was Mike Tyson. I said, I haven't seen a combination like that from a heavyweight since Mike Tyson. Well, guess who says Anthony Joshua's Mike Tyson? Mike freaking Tyson says that Anthony Joshua is Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson said he thinks Joshua can go 49-0. Like, never lose type of deal, as long as he doesn't get too arrogant. He's not going 49-0. But the fact of the matter is, you know, Anthony Joshua is in Under Armour commercials during NBA basketball games in the United States right now. He's got a sponsorship deal with Jaguar, dude. All right? Anthony Joshua is raking it in right now, and boxing is trending upwards. Now, the UFC's not going anywhere, but the fact of the matter is, their last couple of years, and basically them letting Conor McGregor hijack the sport, has opened up the door for boxing to move in the back door. And if you don't think that boxing right now is trending upwards, what's the biggest project that Dana White is working on right now? Trying to get a boxing match. The UFC is chasing a boxer. This is where we're at right now. I don't think people see what's going on. And if you're underestimating boxing and what's going on right now, you're going to end up like Klitschko did, on his ass. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. I am Gabriel Morenci. You know, why does it feel like it's like, I don't know, like Thursday or something right now? Not in a good way. Every day is the same to me. I think it's starting to catch up to me, man. You know, I think I'm like Cal Ripken. You know, I can go every day. I'm doing shows 7 days a week now, man. I'm doing late night podcasts, Saturdays, Sundays, pay-per-views, Patreon, radio show. You freaking name it, I'm doing it. And I don't know what day it is anymore. All I know is, like, it feels like it's like the ninth day of the week. And, like, this is it. We're just getting started right now. Although we did all right last night because we were on the Houston Rockets. All right, let's bring in Steve Merrill right now. Steve, always a pleasure. How you doing?
Hey, Gabe, doing well.
So, Steve, NBA playoffs. How about this? 55 NBA playoff games so far. 32 of them have been decided by 10 points or more. 12 of them have been decided by 20 points or more. Steve, that's 44 out of the 55 NBA playoff games that have been decided by double digits or more. Like, yeah, only 11 out of 55 have been within 10 points. How insane is that?
Yeah, but what's funny about it is, though, I swear half of my plays have been decided by like a basket. Oh, I mean, at least in the first couple of weeks, not as much so recently.
Not me. But I'm the other way, Steve. I've been on every one of these blowouts one way or the other. And I just watch the first quarter and pray. It's like, oh, boy, I'm going to know in about 7 minutes whether I'm going to win or lose.
Yeah, but remember the first week or so, like every game landed within a basket of the side or total. That's changed a little bit. But that first week of the first round, yeah, the line's right. Very tight. So I'm a little surprised.
You know what, Steve? I actually think out of the 11 games, I think like six or seven of them must have been Atlanta Hawk, Washington Wizard games.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, first of all, the Cavalier games and the Warrior games have all probably been double-digit wins for the most part. So, although, actually, the Indiana series was close. I take that back.
Yeah, 16 points, like, yeah.
16 points
total. The Warriors actually have the highest winning margin in NBA playoff history so far through the playoffs. They're winning by an average of 15.8 points a game or something.
Yeah, I mean, they played Portland, and now they're playing Utah. Utah, though, is a dangerous team because they can slow down and play some defense. So it's impressive that they're pulling away in that series. But then again, Hill was out in game two, you know, and injured for game three. So it's a little misleading. And Cleveland obviously took advantage of a weak Indiana team. A little surprised that Toronto laid down. But then again, Lowry was hurt for half that series. So really, Golden State and Cleveland have not been tested yet. And it doesn't look like they will be tested. I mean, I think the only question is, you know, how many games do they lose before they play each other in the finals?
Yeah, if they lose. Neither of them have lost yet.
That's what I'm saying, because they're not going to lose four in a series, I don't think.
Yeah, so Cavs make short work of the Raptors. Wizards beat the Celtics. That's a weird series, a 26-0 run the Wizards rode. And then the Rockets, even the series with the Spurs. And this Rocket-Spurs series, all four games have been blowouts, one way or the other. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I had a really, as I mentioned Friday, I had one of my strongest plays of the playoffs in the Spurs in game two because I just loved them coming off the blowout loss. Didn't use game three. You know, I thought it was a good spot for Houston, but the line was inflated with Parker being out. Same situation yesterday. It was even a better spot for Houston after back-to-back losses. But, you know, my power ratings with Parker, the line would be like three, and it was around 5, 5.5. And I really just don't think Tony Parker is that much of a factor anymore. So with that said, San Antonio is probably worth a look back at home in game five because we will probably get, you know, a shorter price than we should because the fact that Parker still is out and the Spurs got blown out. In fact, they were about a 6-point favorite in game one, and then they were only a 5, 5.5-point favorite in game two. Now they're about a 5.5-point favorite in game five. What's interesting about this line, though, it's the exact same line in game two when Parker was in the lineup. So it shows that the odds makers now aren't adjusting either.
No, they're just making every game 5.5 now in the series. That seems
Is pretty crazy, though, because, I mean, that's saying that home court is worth 5 points each way, which is ridiculous.
We talked about it, I know, the other night because they're scared of these blowouts, and it just keeps happening. Like, you know, it goes to show, we talk about this in the NFL, and I was talking about this on Twitter last night with Tommy Lorenzo, and you know, you look at the NFL, Steve. Point spreads don't often matter in the NFL. Might be one of the most overrated things ever, right? Oh, we're getting four. Oh, we're getting six. Oh, we're getting five. So what, man? The team that's going to win the game is going to win the game. We talk about this every year in the Super Bowl, Steve. It's only been like six Super Bowl losers that covered the point spread in 51 games or something. So, and we see this in the NBA as well. You know, and we talked about it last night, like a lot of people on Twitter I saw. They didn't want to lay the 5.5, so they laid the 220 on the money line with the Rockets. Whatever, man. The Rockets won by 23 or whatever it was.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely not the way to do it. The way to do it in the NFL, and we've talked about this for years, is you play the underdog straight up on the money line, or you play the favorite on the point spread. You don't want to be laying 2-1 because, like you said, the point spread normally doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And to show you how inflated this Houston line is, this is actually a good example. Right now, San Antonio's a 5.5-point favorite. The money line is around 2-1. So that's saying the Spurs have a 67% chance, 70% chance to win straight up. So there's only a 20% chance that Houston loses by exactly 1 to 5 points. So there again, it's unlikely that the point spread matters. There's only a 20% chance that the point spread comes into play one way or the other.
All right, so tonight, the point spread, and it's there. This is how they make money, though. Because, listen, we've seen this. The Warriors haven't lost. The Cavs haven't lost. I just brought up the fact that the Warriors have like a winning margin of nearly 16 points per game. They're clear. They're going to win tonight. I mean, you know, it's when I say generally teams roll over in the NBA when they're down 3-0. I mean, generally as in never. No team has ever come back from 3-0 in the NBA. It's like they don't even try. We saw yesterday the Raptors tap out. We see it time and time and time and time again. But it's up to 8.5. It opened at 6.5, Steve, and it's up to 8.5 now.
Exact same situation, though, as the Toronto-Cleveland game yesterday. It's an 0-3 situation with a big home dog that was in a decent spot in game three to bounce back and still got blown out by double digits and didn't cover. And we saw Toronto yesterday lose by 7. That line went from 6.5 to 7, so it landed right on the closing number. And now this line is inflated a couple points more. But George Hill is also questionable. He's missed the last two games. He's their second leading scorer. He's their top assist man per game. Just like Kyle Lowry, second leading scorer, top assist man for the Raptors, was injured. So it's basically the exact same situation as the Toronto-Cleveland series. Toronto lost by 7. So, I mean, if that's the case, I guess Utah covers by a point tonight.
You know, and we should note, maybe the first half is the way to go. Because Utah will come out fired up. The crowd will be into it.
But the Raptors lost by 12 in the first half yesterday, so who knows?
Yeah, the Raptors are a weird team. The Raptors
are there in this. I would agree with that logic, though, but the Raptors actually covered the second half and lost the first half.
Who would think
down by 12, down 0-3 and down by 12 at halftime, you'd outplay the team in the second half?
I know. I mean,
that's very bizarre.
Yeah, Cleveland got sloppy, and it was weird that the Raptors actually backdoored it. You're right. But look, Friday night, it was the same thing. The Raptors were desperate. They actually, they were down by 3, I think, after
terrible
the first.
Terrible fourth quarter. Yeah, they got out.
Yeah, terrible
like
fourth. Yeah. But my point is, when these teams that are down, they can compete. But normally around late in the third quarter, early in the fourth, if the team that's up 3-0 goes on a run, that's when they tap out.
You would think so. And Golden State, obviously, is more capable of going on a run than any team in the league, other than Cleveland, maybe. Cleveland offensively has been very strong here in the playoffs. And by the way, I don't think that can continue. That's another reason I like Golden State to win this whole thing. Cleveland's defense is still a bit of an X factor. They just haven't been pushed by these opponents. Golden State's good on both ends of the court. And, the Warriors, I would be shocked if they don't close it out. I mean, the altitude is always a concern, but they both have had a day off. The travel scenario has been the same. You know, Utah's strong home court is really based more on catching teams in back-to-back situations during the regular season.
All right, Steve. So you deserve some credit. I should have told the boys to get the tape out from Friday and roll it. But we were going over long shots for Talladega, and you said keep your eye on Ricky Stenhouse. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. gets it done. I mean, what was he, in the 80-1 range?
Yeah, maybe. But I looked this morning to double-check at about 4 or 5 books. He was around 45-1 when we did the show Friday, consensus line. And he closed as low as about 25-1 on Sunday because he got the pole
position. Yeah,
because
of the pole. So it's all when you bet.
It's really an unfortunate thing because it makes absolutely no difference at Talladega.
In fact, I know.
He ran up front, but he was back in the 20 or 30 spot like halfway or late in the race. So the pole position really cost us probably a double payout on that one.
That's what's really bizarre about it, that you look, you'd be like, oh, yeah, Stenhouse won his first race, 158th try. Oh, he was the pole sitter. Yeah, he was the pole sitter, but he was never in first place. Like he was for like 11 laps to start. And then next thing you know, he was buried. And then boom, like, you know, he ended up in the front again at the end.
And Kyle Busch led the last like 18, no, the last 28 laps, I think. And Stenhouse led the overtime lap.
I think Busch led like 48 laps overall, most in the race.
Right.
And McMurray was right there. But basically, we talked about it, Steve, the carnage, and everyone loves that carnage. And it came on lap 168, an 18-car wreck that saw Allmendinger and Chase Elliott get into it. Well, everyone got into it, but...
Yeah, they went upside down or sideways.
Oh, yeah, man, you know, one of them's like on his back, like they're skidding along. Chase Elliott got launched into the air. It was some crazy-ass stuff, man.
Yeah, and Chase Elliott actually is in the Gordon car, the 24. Jeff Gordon has the most restrictor plate wins of all time, ahead of both Earnhardt Sr. and Earnhardt Jr. And Chase Elliott's now in that car, and he's actually been running very well in these restrictor plate tracks, just like his father, Bill Elliott, who still has the fastest Talladega time ever back in 1987, 30 years ago, 212 miles an hour. That's before the restrictor plates were put in. So you can imagine what that would have been like going 20, 30 miles faster yesterday. Still, though, it's the same old race. That happened with 20 laps to go. There'd only been 4 cautions up until about the 30 laps to go sign, and then we got 2 or 3 of them right away, including the big one. And that's why it's a crapshoot, and that's why you have to take guys like Stenhouse at 40-1. Kyle Busch was one of the favorites, you know, 10 or 15-1. And he should have won the race, but he didn't. And that's just how it plays out.
Yeah, Almirola was our long shot. A nice fantasy play, finished in fourth.
He won Saturday. You were a day early. He won the Xfinity race, was a good payout too, probably.
I believe the saying is, I got to start betting the Xfinity a little bit. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I believe the saying is, Steve, I was late for the wedding and I was early for the funeral.
I think you get a little bit of credit, though. He won one of the two Talladega races. You didn't necessarily specify which ones. So you could probably
it's true. I said to keep your eye on him this weekend. You're right.
We show you saying Alamora and then me saying Stenhouse. It looks like the Saturday-Sunday double, the exacta.
Oh, damn, should have done that. All right, so I did have Always Dreaming, too, on Saturday. All right, so Steve Merrill's Major League Baseball power poll ratings over at Covers Experts released today. The number one ranked team in Merrill's power rankings, the Washington Nationals, take on the Baltimore Orioles, the fourth ranked team in Steve's rankings. Not small road favorites here, the Beltway Series, as they call it. I was amazed to see, Steve, that the Washington Nationals have not won a Beltway Series since 2007. That's insanity to me.
Well, they always play two games, so I guess you'd have to go 2-0. Or unless they're counting the home and the away, maybe.
Combined. A series, yeah. So, yeah, you're right.
It's usually a four-game series, so you'd have to go 3-1 to win it. So
yeah, but still, the math after 10 years, you know what I mean?
Well, especially since the Nationals have been a really strong team. Although the Orioles have been a strong team now for, the last, 5 years plus. In fact, the Orioles are still fourth in my power rankings the last couple weeks. The Nationals are first for the last 2 weeks, as you mentioned. And what I love about Washington, I keep saying this, but their offense is just incredible this year. It's still the best in baseball. Ryan Zimmerman, he's hitting .435 now. He had four multi-hit games again last week alone to go up to .435. The bullpen, though, remains weak. And we'll see if they pick somebody up at the trade deadline, which I'm sure they will. Maybe the White Sox close, somebody like that. And when they get a good closer, which I think they will, if this offense stays hot, they're definitely the team to beat.
Gio Gonzalez on the hill for the Nationals. He hasn't given up more than two runs in any of his five starts this year. Gossman on the hill for the Birds. And, man, he's been roughed up. He's given up 18 runs in his last 14 innings, like 24 hits. Both teams have been money earners. Baltimore, a nice solid plus 1,000 units on the season. So 10 units. Nationals are up 684 units, nearly 7 units on the season. Tough game tonight. Sort of leading the Nationals. Nats lost yesterday, but they rested their stars. So, they should be fired up tonight. They have the pitching advantage.
Yeah, and I mean, the starting pitching's good for Washington. That's always a concern. But the over's still worth a look with that offense and that bullpen and both teams. And Baltimore's a good hitting team as well. I think the over's always worth a look at national games right now.
All right, we got to get out of here. But the Blue Jays, they've won 5 of 8. They get Edwin Encarnacion returns this evening. He's really been struggling. He's struck out a ton this year. Both teams have been money burners. Tribe minus -415. Jays nearly minus -11 units on the season. If the Jays are going to get back in this, they need to keep this up and keep on just winning series, chip away, and then suddenly you're 30-30 type of deal. I think they can get it done tonight.
Yeah, with the Blue Jays, I'm looking for them to turn the corner because they've started slow the last 2 years, but they've been a fantastic team, especially 2 years ago, the best team in baseball the second half of that 2015 season. Maybe this is the buy sign now with them having a winning week.
Yeah, we got to get out of here. Cubs, Yankees, 18 innings last night. Longest game in Major League Baseball history. Both in bad spots tonight. But Tanaka's on the hill for the Bombers. He's a good pitcher. He could go 7 or 8 tonight, Steve. But the Reds are hot, so I'm going to avoid that game. Arrieta is not the same pitcher on the road as he is at Wrigley. They got to go all the way out there to the altitude. The Rockies are waiting. I like the Rockies.
Yeah, that's a terrible spot for Colorado. Having to travel from another city now to the altitude, tough spot.
Steve Merrill, check him out. ProSportsInfo.com, one of the Covers Experts. Always a pleasure, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
Coach Nick, B-Ball Breakdown, joins me next. Game time decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenzi. I'm talking really fast. There's a lot of stuff I want to get to with our next guest. Coach Nick B-Ball, a breakdown joins us. And you guys know me. I've always been the Team Jordan guy and thought it was ridiculous or LeBron. And never mind the fact, they're not the same player. LeBron James compares much more to Magic freaking Johnson than he does Michael Jordan with his skill set, I believe. But I saw the other day, and I don't want to start doing shows on what Skip Bayless says, but a lot of people picked this up that LeBron is great, but he's not beating anybody. Oh, yeah, he's been to six straight finals. He's never really beaten anybody good. Everybody in the old NBA was way better. And I used to be that angry old man telling these young millennials to get off my freaking lawn. But let's be real, man, all right? I watch Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. Let's not pretend every team they beat was the greatest team ever, all right? Like, starting to piss me off right now. Let's bring in Coach Nick and get his take on this and much more. How you doing, Nick?
I'm good. Thank you for bringing me on. And, you know, if you want me to weigh in, I actually grew up in Chicago having season tickets to all the Bulls games. So I saw Jordan close up for all his career. And I don't think that LeBron is as good as Jordan, but he's like 1B. And if you want to talk about skill set, at the very least, no one's going to argue with you. I think that Michael Jordan had more skill. And then in his early part of his career, athletically, he was, you know, different because LeBron is just raw power. But Michael probably was more athletic in the springy, you know, lie that, you know, that quick sense of the word. But, you know, it's really kind of splitting hairs. And it's not LeBron's fault. He cannot control who he plays. You know, Bill Russell couldn't control who he played against or Wilt. So you have to judge him by their accomplishment more than like who they ended up playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But coming back and beating the Golden State Warriors last year, had the greatest record ever. Now, I'm not stating that because you have the greatest record ever makes you the greatest team ever. But I'm thinking back, and like you said, you were there. I wasn't there, but I was betting on the games, and I remember it like they were yesterday. So, you know, that Seattle Supersonic team, that was a fun team. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a fun team. Perkins, Shrimp, the Glove, and, of course, Kemp, etc. Damn dynamic team. Is that team better than the Golden State Warriors are right now? Was Charles Barkley and the Phoenix Suns better than the Warriors are right now?
No, but like the Jazz, they ended up beating twice, were as tough as you're going to come with two Hall of Famers and a really good cast around them. So, you know, it is what it is. You can't control. I know the Warriors got a pass because guys were injured on their way up when they won the title. It's just kind of a silly argument. And if you're going to use that to, you know, knock LeBron down, then I'll go like, yeah, you're just a hater and you're just looking for any excuse to put any of these players down. They can't control it. It's not up to them. What I've seen from LeBron is awesome. Number two in all time. Just a little bit behind Jordan.
So that's where you have him right now. He's a number two. Since game five of the finals last year, 11-0 record, 34.9 points per game, 9.7 rebounds per game, and 7 assists per game, which leads me into their sweep of the Raptors. And, you know, the Raptors were handcuffed, obviously, with Kyle Lowry being out. But truth be told, if Lowry is there, and maybe they win one of the games. The Raptors had chemistry problems all year. You and I discussed this earlier in the year, Coach. And I tell you, Masai Ujiri has sort of been one of the... He's been on a years-long honeymoon. Like, he sort of walks on air in Toronto. People love him. He's done a great job. You know, the Raptors were a toiling, Rudy Gay shooting, 35-win team. And suddenly he sort of turned it around into what they become. But he's going to earn his money this offseason. Almost every situation and every player, there's a decision to be made. And let's start off at the top right now, Coach, with Dwayne Casey. It's extremely tough. Like, I saw Hubie Brown yesterday was talking about what a great coach Casey is. You know, 3 division titles in the last 4 years, 4 division titles in the last 5 years, whatever. Bunch of 50-plus win seasons. If you fire this guy, that's the stupidest thing ever type of deal. But at the same point in time, they've kind of hit a wall and there seems to be friction and a difference in philosophies with Casey and maybe Ujiri and the players in today's NBA. And then you got Jerry Stackhouse, who's a hot prospect, just won the D-League title with the Toronto team, the 905ers. Mm-hmm. What do you do in this spot? It seems like it's a tough decision for real.
I've been calling for Casey to be replaced for a couple of years now because of that ceiling. And we've seen, like, Mark Jackson is a good example in Golden State where there was a ceiling there, and when they replaced him, look what happens. They took off. And quite frankly, what was done in this playoffs, I thought was very poor coaching because offensively, they just didn't seem to understand how they should be attacking the Cleveland Cavaliers defense, which isn't great. And yet, time and again, they wouldn't, you know, run a screen and roll with Kevin Love, for instance, to attack him. And as a result, they got swept when they probably could have won a couple games or a game and looked a little bit better. There might have been a ceiling for this team either way, but I'm convinced that like a different coach would have gotten them, they would have played better. And that's the frustration thing. I don't think their offense has never been good, and it's never been built to be successful in the playoffs because the shots are so difficult out of the ISO heavy stuff that they do. You're going up against a good team that's veteran, that's got a lot of poise, and they turned it up a little bit, and they've scouted you. You're not going to be successful. You know, they've gotten as far as they can, and I think it's time.
Yeah, I have to agree there. And it doesn't mean, hey, listen, he's not going to be out of work long, right, Coach? He's not in Toronto. He's going to get a job somewhere else.
As a head coach, I don't know.
Really? You don't think so with all the wins?
I think that the league is moving towards younger guys, and he'll probably be expensive. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they think. But I would like to know what other people think. And by the way, I'm the jerk who gets to sit here and criticize him without knowing anything going on in the locker room or whatever. But the bottom line is, I'm sure in his contract it says you must accept the fact that guys like me are going to criticize you. So that's how it is. But I don't know what kind of commodity he might be. You know, we kind of gone away from the Bill Fitches who kept getting rehired on stuff. And so I don't know how quickly he gets another job.
Interesting. Interesting. So Kyle Lowry announced earlier today he's going to opt out and test the free agency waters. That's not a surprise. He's earned it. 31 years old right now. This is his payday, so to speak. And truth be told, and I'm a diehard Raptor fan, I'm in no hurry to give him $200 million right now. You can't insult him and say, well, Kyle, listen, how would you like to do a 2-year deal? I'd gladly give you $60 million for 2 years. That's an insult. So you can't sign this guy to a max deal. The last two playoff series, he's ended up to finish the series on the bench. He's wearing out. There's somewhat of attitude problems. He is a very good player, top five player at the position when he's healthy. As far as Lowry is concerned, Coach, do you think a winning team like the Spurs says, you know what, let's bring him in here and make this work? Or does he take the money and end up with the Philadelphia 76ers and just be happy with his $200 million?
You know, I have no idea what his value is going to be. I mean, I suppose they're going to end up bidding max for him, and he's not going to be. I don't think he is really worth the max. Now, that said, in the Toronto, he is that hero that's brought them into this limelight of winning that they hadn't had much before. So, but if you're going to run a business, you can't pay for past performance. You got to pay for what he's going to do in the future. That the last 2 years of that deal, of a 5-year max deal, won't be worth it nearly at all. And so, and if he wants to win, and if they keep this team together, that ain't going to happen either. So he would be best off, if he wants to win, to take a little less money and go to a better situation. Now, I don't know how well I see him fitting in with the Spurs. It's an interesting, weird dynamic. Same with CP3. But I don't know how well that would work for him, but if it makes them any better either. So Philly is another interesting thing, one. But they've got Simmons coming back. I think they want him to run point. So that would just stunt his growth. It's a conundrum. And I don't know if the Raptors could somehow sign him for less years. That would probably be the best take for him.
I know. And last thing about the Raptors, I don't want to be too Raptor-centric here, but if Kyle Lowry goes, and I'm looking at the free agent pool, listen, as it is right now, the Raptors are a well-run organization. Players like the city of Toronto. They like coming here. They like the strip clubs, etc. But at the same point in time, they don't like the taxes. So they like it in a short period of time. So my point is, it's not as if all the Raptors have the pick of the litter when it comes to free agents, even if they have the money. And then on top of that, it's a thin class this year. There's a couple of guys out there that aren't going to be in the Raptors realm. And then you've got your J.J. Redicks and your JaVale McGee's of the world. So long story short, as far as the point guard position, they let him go. Corey Joseph becomes the guy.
Right.
Corey Joseph, if he plays within his means, is he a 14-10 guy on a nightly basis? And you've got Wright, the kid out of Utah, who Jerry Stackhouse just won the D-League with, etc. Do you go young? What do the Raptors do with the point guard position? They're kind of in a tough spot, man. There's not a lot of guys out there.
I hear you. And from my perspective, you know, as a coach, anybody would love to have Corey Joseph on their team. There's no question. He's the hardest worker. He's a great teammate. You'd love to have him. But he's not a starting point guard on a, you know, Final Four team in the NBA. He's just not. And that's what your goal is, or to get even maybe farther than that, then it can't be Corey Joseph. And that's going to be a real problem, which is probably why we're just going to end up seeing Lowry signing a five-year max, super max, whatever that's going to be for him. And they're going to have to ride that out. I mean, you know, I would almost think that, fine, keep Lowry and maybe trade DeRozan. But to get back to your point about Joseph, yeah, there's not going to be anyone they're going to replace him with in the free agent market. It's going to be much better. And this is that's probably why we're going to see Lowry end up, you know, at least they're going to offer it to him. They're going to do their best to keep him, even though it's not going to be a great contract after a couple of years.
All right, it's getting to the point where it's not, can the Cavs or the Warriors be beat before the finals? It's gotten to the point where they lose a game before the finals. Here they are, they're 15-0. Do you anticipate Utah winning tonight?
No. I think I'm not so sure the Warriors are going to lose a game at all in the Western Conference. It's, you know, possible in that second round. Now, the Cavaliers are interesting because it kind of feels the same way. But if the Wizards get through and they can attack the Cavaliers' poor defense, then I think that the Cavaliers are going to be the first ones to blink. It won't really matter too much, but they might end up coming in there with a loss or two. But again, with the Warriors, I think it's over tonight, even though they, you know, there was some drama, I suppose, in the game three. But I don't think with the injuries they're dealing with in Utah, they have a real legitimate shot at it. And I think that the Warriors can make it through to the finals without a loss.
Yeah, the Wizards be interesting because you're right. Look at the Casey and the Raptors didn't take advantage of it. The Cavaliers are a little soft on the inside. You pound it in inside, play physical. The Raptors didn't do that. The Cavaliers' biggest weakness, their transition defense on a fast break. They don't get back. They're lazy. They don't rotate. They don't do a lot of things, and they've sort of accepted that. Raptors didn't take advantage of that either. The Wizards could push the tempo on them.
For sure. I mean, when you watch John Wall shoot out of that cannon, it's frightening almost because it's so fast. He has highlight plays every quarter now. And you saw that 26-0 run yesterday. I mean, that's an avalanche and it's all like transition stuff. So, again, I don't know if they beat the Cavaliers at all. And maybe they win a game or two or something, but it's certainly something the Cavaliers should be concerned with. And who knows? Maybe it was part of the reason why they dropped the number two because they knew they didn't want to meet them until later.
Charles, we got to get out of here, but it's the number one thing that drove me crazy about Dwayne Casey, too. 17-2 runs, and then he calls a timeout. Yesterday, during the 26-0 timeout, like I would have called six. I would have used all, like, every 4 points. I would have been like, what part of this do you guys not get? All right? Yeah, you got to stop this. Stop this run. But 26-0 run, crazy series. Always love talking hoops with the coach. Thanks for the time.
You got it. Thanks.
There's Coach Nick, B-Ball Breakdown with us. Cody Saftick joins us next to talk some MMA. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. A lot of stuff to get to with Cody Saftick. Before we get into the cage, let's talk some ponies as me and Cody are getting into the horse racing business. Cody, of course, is a lifer, but me and a raging redhead, Red Heat and Rage Racing, will be taking flight in the next couple of weeks. And we're off to a nice start, as I was on Always Dreaming. And a lot of people, oh, big deal, Marenzi, you're on the favorite. I told you Always Dreaming was going to win. Months ago, about a month ago, basically. Why? Because, let's be real, it's like a broken clock is right twice a day. I always bet the winner of the Florida Derby.
I was going to say the same thing. Just bet the winner of the Florida Derby. I think the...
Last year, Nyquist?
Yeah, 3 of the last 5 years it's been the Florida Derby winner. So the only thing is it starts raining, and now you're thinking, okay, well, maybe the rain's going to
play in the variable,
factor.
Right?
And now there's 20-horse field, so it's like, okay, I'm a little bit nervous. But as soon as you start to pull away, you just knew championship-quality horse. And
that,
you
know, really proves his quality, doesn't it, with all those variables. 20 horses, sloppy track. Supposedly he was rattled all week. He didn't like it there. He didn't like the atmosphere. Yet he just smoked the field.
Yeah, well, we saw the problem with Nyquist last year is that how he's going to deal with the sloppy track, right? So every horse is going to be different. And most of the horses in that 20-horse field had never even raced on a sloppy track. So nice to see him come out there and get the win. And Always Dreaming, you're always hoping for another Triple Crown winner. So will he be able to do it? No idea. But off to a good start.
Off to a good start. I know people always jump in. I don't know. I'm going to say no just because of the fact.
Because it's super hard.
Yeah, I was just saying no, right? No. All right. So UFC. It's been, seems like it's been forever since we had a UFC card. UFC 211. We got a stacked card, actually. It's an MMA purist card. It's not a superstar laden card in the sense of, you know, the mainstream. But, you know, it's a great card. Great card. We got championship fights, heavyweight fights. You know, Miocic for the heavyweight champion really doesn't get the credit that he deserves, especially in a division, Cody, which I don't think anyone ever defended the belt more than once or twice.
Yeah, fair
He's
enough.
Defended it three times now, right? He's won four straight fights. He gets Dos Santos. They fought years ago. Dos Santos won in a 25-minute battle.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, so he's just got the one title defense. He wins the title over Fabricio Werdum. And here's my kind of an issue with him, Gabe, is that he was a big underdog coming into that Werdum fight. Werdum comes in, terrible game plan, just bum rushes him, gets clipped. All of a sudden, Stipe is a champ and a good champion, a talented guy, still only 33. That's very young for heavyweight still. But now you're getting this fight against Alistair Overeem. And what people will always remember about the Overeem fight is that he knocked him out. But you got to remember that Overeem hurt this guy as well, and so did JDS. Now, you got to go back to the first time around. If you're going to look at this fight for what it is, and that's Junior Dos Santos being probably the better striker on paper, a guy that has the big power, a guy that could hurt Stipe, then Stipe's been doing what he does against superior strikers. He looks for that takedown. 1-4-18 in takedowns the last time he fought Junior Dos Santos. He could not take this man down. So I see the same thing playing out this time around. JDS is the dog.
Sounds like you're liking a Brazilian.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think one of the two Brazilian title challengers will win, and I don't think Andrade is going to be that one.
Those are all great points that you just raised. There was a part that you left out.
Sure, yeah, many parts
that
left
was
out.
That was 3 years ago.
Fair.
Secondly, Junior Dos Santos, if there's one guy that's been punch drunk and beat up and is not the same fighter, it's Junior Dos Santos.
Yeah,
is he refreshed now? He could be refreshed right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Is he burnt or is he refreshed?
We were all talking about how burnt this guy was. I mean, you look at the wars that he had with Cain Velasquez, and those are brutal on the own. You look at that KO loss that he had to Alistair Overeem, and now you're thinking the guy's done. But I got to say that heavyweights are typically fighters that can fight 35, 36, 37. So he's still fairly young for that heavyweight division. And also, Gabe, he took a little bit of time back. He took a little bit of time off. He switched camps, went to American Top Team. He's not banging.
And since that fight against JDS, he's only fought twice. You're right. He fought 2014.
That's what
once
he's
in 15.
Conserve himself.
Once in 2016. So he's only fought three times in the last 3 years.
How good did he look against Ben Rothwell?
Because he looked good.
This is a guy that usually goes in there aggressive, using those big heavy hands, trying to get into his opponent's face. But against Rothwell, he came out as methodical JDS, looking to counterpunch, looking to lay back, and it actually did work for him. So I'm just looking at this fight as pretty much a pick'em. The odds are going to suggest pretty much a pick'em. But I'm going to take the slight dog money on JDS, and you got to remember that he has a win over Stipe already, yep, previously. So maybe he's in his head. We don't know. Stipe likes to party a lot, and winning the title was no doubt an opportunity for him to go on the highest level of the world, tour the world, go to the Cavalier Games as a star. You know what? That takes its toll on somebody. It's hard being a champion. It's hard being a star. So JDS could come out here for dog money and pull off the victory, and I don't expect him to do it, but that's where I'm putting my money.
The other championship belt, Jacek takes on Andrade, -165, 170. I'm surprised it wasn't a little bit higher, actually, to be honest with you. I thought she'd open up in a 2-1 favorite. What do you make of this one?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are looking at Andrade has looked better against past opponents that Yan Jacek's had. So you look at Yan Jacek versus like a Jessica Penne. She gives Jessica Penne everything. Hurts this girl, beats her down, gets the stoppage, and it's impressive. But then you look at Andrade and what she can go do and go and beat a girl like this. Joanne Calderwood, and obviously that's not a common opponent, but Joanne Calderwood's a big girl. You see what Andrade can go do? She's so physically imposing.
Joanna gets hit, let's be real. She gets hit. She finds herself, she's never lost. But you're right. The last three fights, she finds herself in battles and in wars. She does.
In wars. Because she doesn't got that one punch power. She's got just punch output. She'll hit you with 30 punches and that.
She has that championship pedigree, though, Cody. When you get into the later rounds, she digs down deeper and something that the other girls don't have.
Right. And that's how I think she's going to win. If you look at that fight against Claudia Gadelha, it's very much the same thing that you might face with a Jessica Andrade here. She's bigger. She's stronger. And she can go out there and secure the takedowns early. But getting those takedowns is going to take a lot out of you. It's going to wear you down. It's going to zap your energy. And who do you not want to get tired against? Joanne and Jacek. Because once again, it's not the one punch power, it's the 30 punches. And imagine getting hit with those in the fourth round, the fifth round. It takes its toll on you. Claudia Gadelha didn't have the cardio to keep up that pace. Even though she won the first two rounds, she easily lost 3, 4, and 5, and you get Joanna Jędrzejczyk as the champion. The same thing probably happens here in the Andrade fight. Andrade comes out very strong, very powerful, very aggressive, but she fades. We've seen in her fight against Raquel Pennington the same thing happen, and yes, that's two weight classes up, but Joanna Jędrzejczyk should be able to pull this out in the later rounds and do get the decision.
I agree with Cody on that one. I disagree with the main event. I'm going to say that it's going to be, and still, two champions. All right, we got about a minute and a half or so here, but you know, a very interesting card. Frankie Edgar, Yair Rodriguez. Edgar's a -130 favorite. Damian Maia and Masvidal. Quick turnaround for Masvidal. Masvidal's a -115 favorite here. Poirier and Eddie Alvarez. Cejudo and Sarah and Pettis. Jason Knight and Skelly. That's a fun fight.
That's a great
right
fight.
That's to me. That's the one. I'm like, oh, I gotta.
Plus
I wanna
100
watch
Jason
this one.
Knight, baby.
Jason Knight at plus money. Huh?
Yeah,
it's tough.
Plus 100, but I'll take it.
Plus 110. I'm seeing here, depending on the book.
Yeah, I like it.
Yes, it's a fun card, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You talked about how stacked this is, and maybe someone's looking at this. As a real casual fan might think, well, there's no Conor McGregor, there's no Ronda Rousey. People, think about this for 1 second. Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier. First of all, fight of the night. Second of all, Eddie Alvarez, former lightweight champ, has never not been co-main event or main event in his UFC career. He's on the prelim portion of this card.
Yeah, Maya's won, what, eight fights in a row?
It's loaded. Damian Maia versus George Masvidal. If that's not the people's main event, then I don't know what is. This whole card is loaded. And there's some good lines up top to bottom here, but Eddie Alvarez, absolutely. I mean, you got to look at the fact that his last fight was against Conor McGregor, UFC 205, one of the biggest pay-per-views in company history, and now he's on the prelims.
One of the biggest.
This is a great card. I am enjoying it very much so.
One of the biggest choke jobs in MMA history.
Well, hopefully he can rebound.
That was
here.
Terrible.
Dustin Poirier, are you liking him? It's pretty much an even money fight.
I would like to take Eddie.
Philly strong, baby.
I would like to take Eddie, but I'm not. Yeah, I'm not fully in love with it. I'll have my picks later in the week. I do stand by my other picks. So I think Stipe wins, and I think Joanna remains champion as well. Game time decisions continues to come back with our plays of the day. All right, we've got, there's only one NBA game on the board this evening, so no DraftKings. We do have a bunch of picks for it. We're going to start off in the National Basketball Association, and I don't know why I'm doing this, because normally if you bet an underdog, you want to bet an underdog that has a chance to win the game. Do the Utah Jazz have a chance to win the game tonight? No. They're not winning the game tonight. The Cavaliers and the Warriors, man, they're 15-0. In a postseason. And teams that are down 3-0 generally roll over. And when I mean generally, I mean always. So, but it's 8.5 points. It's a lot of points. It's a lot of points. We're going to take a shot with Utah Jazz. As far as the total, I don't want any part of it. It's probably going to go under. I'm going to watch the in game and try to bet over like 190 in game or something like that. But tread lightly with the Jazz plus 8.5. All right, Pittsburgh Penguins. Hey, Washington Capitals have shown some heart. You decapitated Crosby. You won a couple of games. Good for you. You lose tonight. All right, it's imminent. It's as sure as the sun rising and setting, the Capitals will find a way to choke in the playoffs. And if they don't, then hey, I picked them to win the cup, but I'll be right either way. I'm like anyone else in the media. I'm playing both sides. I think the Penguins win tonight, though. I think it goes under 5.5, man. It's going to be a very, very tense hockey game. I think goals are going to be at a premium. All right, Blue Jays. Don't look now, man. The Blue Jays have actually won 5 of 8 baseball games. Edwin Encarnacion returns to Toronto this evening. Stroman's 0-3 at home this year. I think he gets his first win. I'm going to take the Blue Jays, -125. Kansas City Royals on the road. Nice pitching spot here for the Royals, +125. And the Cubs last night, Cubs just got swept by the Yankees. They played until 2 a.m. They played Major League Baseball's longest game ever. Now they got to go out to the Mile High City in Denver. Yeah, you got Arrieta on the hill. Arrieta's not the same pitcher on the road as he is at home.